Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the show today. If you're like me, you might sometimes wonder what's happened to the notion of taking pride in giving great customer service. And my guest today says that's because the company has lost its glow. So we're talking about today how we can make business glow, whether we work for ourselves or for someone else. How can we bring that glow back into the workplace, the business place? And my guest is Dr. Tom Dakotis. He started his own consulting firm more than 20 years ago and specializes in values-based and vision-directed strategies. Tom has worked with industry leaders such as IBM, Outback Steakhouses, Hyatt Hotels, Blockbuster Video, Royal Caribbean, and many, many more big companies. He received his doctorate in industrial and organizational psychology and describes himself as a lifelong student of leadership. And he's coming up in just one moment, but I do want to add that toward the end of the show, in the last segment, we'll be having a local businesswoman with us. She's based right here in Kirkland. She owns her own holistic business, and we'll be talking to her about how she made the transition from the corporate world to her own holistic business 9 years ago. And we'll be talking to her about that and some of her philosophy on how you can declutter your life to open space for new things. And so I'd like to welcome Dr. Tom Dakotis to the show today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. And you're staying somewhere very nice today, I understand. You're staying at the Trump Hotel in New York, Manhattan, overlooking Central Park, right?
Yes, and it's a beautiful day.
Well, good. And we're glad you could join us. I should tell our listeners that your book that has just come out is called Make It Glow, How to Build a Company Reputation for Human Goodness, Flawless Execution, and Being Best in Class. Tom, there are so many business books out there. Why did you write this one, and how does it differentiate from the others on the shelves?
Well, that's a good question. You're right. We don't need just another business book. The book subject is really in the title, and the earning a reputation for flawless execution, human goodness, flawless execution, and being best in class really applies to any form of enterprise. You know, whether you're a charity, a church, an educational foundation, or a business. And it's something that I thought was needed. And also, most of the other business books that I've read deal with simply one subject, how to develop your business model, how to execute. And being successful in a company really requires a combination of things. You've got to have a vision, you have to have a strategy, you have to create a brand, and you ought to measure results. And the book is about all of those subjects, going from the context of leader values.
Mm. And I love the title, Make It Glow. Tell us what you mean by glow, Tom.
Well, glow is that special quality. You know, you surely see it in people you meet that draw you to them. And usually the way they draw you to them is because they simply make you feel good about yourself. And they do it by showing an interest in you, paying attention, being respectful and courteous and fair. And companies can do the same thing. You know, when we go back again and again to a company to shop or to a restaurant to dine, we don't go there just for the products and services. In fact, we go there because there's something about going to that place that gives us more than when we went in. We just feel better about having chosen to go there. Mm. And companies that are able to pull that off are the ones that glow.
Mm. Now, is it my imagination, or do you think that service has deteriorated a lot over the last few years in America?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
I said, is it my imagination, or do you think that service has deteriorated a lot in America over the past few years?
I think it has. Certainly, if I I'm on airplanes all the time, and so I can speak to one industry where it clearly has over the last 30 years that I've been in business. But in general, the businesses seem to be working on a short-term perspective. They don't seem to be concerned about earning the loyalty of their best customers, of their best, employees. Instead, they're out there trying to get every transaction they can get rather than to build a relationship with the people they want to be part of their company.
And to me, that seems very short-sighted because I read in your book that the average company now only lasts 30 years, whereas we know that, years gone by, they used to, they would boast, we've been around for 100 years or more.
Right. And I think it's, partly that's a couple of things. That's in a startup company. Usually, they start up and grow and they have a reason they start to grow. And I call it, being worthy of growth. But then they get away from that. They fail to build the leaders fail to build the fundamentals into the business, what I call the basics of the business, to make sure that they leverage their values into how the business is done. And, it shouldn't be surprising that at the end of 2 or 3 or 4 years, it's no longer the same business.
Right. Now, you say that a lot of companies glow when they first start up. The leader has a very strong vision, and they're all fired up for success. They know exactly where they want to go, and they gradually lose that glow, and they tip into what you call a state of wobble. And you actually say that when you and your partner started your first company 20 years ago, you wobbled much more than you needed to in the early days. So what did you learn from that state of wobble?
Well, we didn't spend enough time defining, what we wanted to accomplish. We weren't clear on our vision. All we said was when we started our first company was that we wanted to build a company that we were proud to be part of, and that's a nice statement, but it's not enough. We didn't say this is what we're going to deliver to our customers. This is what it's going to mean for people to work here, and so we wobbled around trying to figure that out over the years, and we didn't need to. If we had sat down and do like what we do now with companies, which is to say, this is what your vision is going to be, and this is what you're going to accomplish, and this is how you're going to measure it, and this is what your strategy is going to be, we'd have had hopefully a better outcome sooner than we would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so, in our case, it was a matter of a race to get our first customer and keep our first customer before we actually ran out of money. And I'm sure that's what happens to a lot of small businesses.
Right. You talked earlier about the lack of relationship building that we see within companies today. Mm-hmm. And, I know from experience in the business world that it costs far more to attract a new customer than it does to retain and keep an existing customer happy. So, and you talk a lot about belonging and significance. So I wonder if you'd share with us how we build a customer loyalty base.
Sure. And I think that number, I think I've read several times that it costs about 7 times more to get a new customer than it does mm-hmm. to keep an old one. So, it's obviously worth building loyalty. Belonging and significance to me is one of the most fundamental human needs. We want to go to places where we feel like we're welcome, that we belong, that we have a place, that we're just not interchangeable with any other customer or human that comes into the place. And then significance is about that our place in that business, whether we're a customer or an employee or a supplier, is valued, that they would miss us if we were gone. And, when a company sets about to address that human need in its customers or any of its stakeholders, it can't help but to be successful because It's a need that's never fulfilled. I mean, we can't get enough of feeling good about ourselves.
Sure.
And so, you know, you find yourself drawn back to those places, those relationships, whether it's a personal relationship or a business relationship, that create that sense in yourself.
Mm. Well, let's look at some of the elements of glow. You have a pyramid that describe the elements of glow, and it begins as we might, or at the bottom of the pyramid, as we might think, there's passion, purpose, beliefs, values. What do you mean by stakeholder promises?
First off, what is a stakeholder? You know, to me, a stakeholder is anyone that has a claim on the success of the business. In other words, a customer, an employee, a supplier, an investor. And, you know, that's where the term stakeholder comes from. And what that claim is whatever you promise them. A lot of business people talk about exceeding expectations, and I honestly have never known what that means, because I can't imagine knowing what everybody's expectations are. Mm. But what I can do is to set expectations by what I promise my customers. If, for example, I think about Southwest Airlines as a best-in-class company for a couple of reasons. One of them is it does exactly what it says it's going to do. It gives you a seat on an airplane. It's fairly crowded. It gets you there on time. It won't transfer your luggage. You're going to get nothing to eat. But you do it all at a fair price. And customers love it. You know, and it's not that they're blown away by whatever flying in friendly skies or anything like that. What happens is that Southwest Airlines sets an expectation for its customer and then delivers it. That expectation is what I call the promise.
Okay. Now, they just ran into trouble with this girl who's been on every talk show, I think, on on television, because she was asked to leave because they said she was inappropriately dressed. She was showing a little cleavage, and her skirt was very short. So how has that impacted Southwest Airlines and the promise that they give to customers?
You know, I don't know specifically. I suspect not at all. I think probably most people would be willing to say that was taking things to a level of being silly.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, what is good taste for me may not be good taste for someone else, and to call that out is probably, I would guess the leaders of that company were horrified when an employee took it upon themselves to do that, because that's not the business they're in.
Right.
And, you know, and obviously she had dressed that way somewhere else and no one ever noticed or said anything. So, you know, that's not a part of the promises. And that's where, you know, you get into something else where it's so important to to develop your employees. You know, in that case, the employee is the face, heart, and hands of the brand. In that case, it was Southwest Airlines. And when they're doing that, they are the airline, and it's pretty much true of any service company.
Yeah. Now, on this pyramid again, which I know our listeners can't see, but it's at the top of the pyramid, you have something called promise-keeping processes.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you have, let's say you make a promise. You have Outback Steakhouses out there where you live, and they make three promises to their customers. The first one is serious food. The second one is concentrated service. The third one is no rules. And the first one is about obviously the food. And it really is about how the food is put together and the quality of the ingredients. The second one is about the nature of the service encounter. And the third one is all about how they individualize the experience to the customer. Those are all promises until you figure out how to flawlessly execute them. And that's where promise-keeping processes come into play. You know, it would involve how things are prepared, in that case of a restaurant, the meals, the size of a workstation that a particular server would have, the nature of the wines they serve. All of those things are processes that are set up to say, if I'm going to guarantee my customers X, I better make sure I have processes that do that. In our business, we call those things touch points. Mm-hmm. And what that is simply an opportunity to make an impression on the feelings and thoughts of the customer. So, you know, we all dine in restaurants, so it's probably a good example. When you walk up to the front door of a restaurant, that front door is a touch point. You look at it, and if it's smeared and it has handprints on it and so forth, you immediately feel something and you think something. You know, maybe the restaurant's not clean, and this, so on. You walk inside and you see the host and hostess. You may have a feeling and a thought based on how they're dressed, how they address you, what they say to you, and so on down the line. All of those things, all those details are what go into keeping the promises you make. And a lot of times, in our experience, you know, leaders don't see the connection between what they say they're going to deliver to their customers and what they're actually doing in their business. So there's a disconnect between the promises and the promise-keeping processes.
Yeah, and that connection is crucial, isn't it? And you actually, just for that example you gave us, looking at a restaurant, you actually gave a list of 60 touch points where you have the opportunity to either impress the customer or not impress the customer.
Right. Yeah, and it's just in everybody, you know, if it's in any business, it's in a retail store or anything else, an airline. You know, every time that customer comes up to you to do something, you have the opportunity to win or lose by how you shape their feelings and their thoughts. And usually the reaction is there before the thought is. In other words, I'm comforted before I have a thought, an awareness of why it is.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Tom Dakotas. And I'm going to ask Tom what he means by success as a beginning and end. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Food, drugs, alcohol, and sex. If you're struggling at any level with an addiction, tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair next Monday for Mindful Solutions for Addiction and Relapse Prevention. This powerful new program developed by Doctors Elisha and Stephanie Goldstein can help you start turning things around today. That's next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, this is Howard Bono, the host of The Money Thing, heard right here on Tuesdays at noon. You don't need to know everything about money, but there are some things you really should know. Each week, my co-host Gary Mance and I will bring you the information that you need. We cut through all the verbiage and marketing hype to provide you with an hour of condensed, easy-to-understand information. We want to improve the quality of your life by taking the financial stress away. So join us for The Money Thing, Tuesdays at noon, here on Alternative Talk 1150.
No shirt, no shoes? No problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
She was some kind of a girl. Skinny legs and braces. Even with a nagging spoon, she went all the races. She was some kind of a girl.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest this segment of the show is Dr. Tom Dakotas. He's the co-founder and CEO of Corvitus. Did I say that right, Tom? Is it Corvitus?
It's Corvitus.
Corvitus. And he has more than 30 years experience working with startup, fast growth, turnaround companies and not-for-profits that want to emphasize values, execution and being the best in their industry as the basis of their growth. And Tom has written a great book. It's called Make It Glow: How to Build a Company Reputation for Human Goodness, Flawless Execution and Being Best in Class. And let's go ahead and give out your website, Tom, and we'll do that before the end of this segment as well so that listeners can look you up if they want to know more. So what is your website, please?
It is corvirtus.com.
Okay.
corvirtus.com.
Great. And I wanted to ask you what you mean by success, because you talk about there's personal success and business success,
mm-hmm.
and you define that slightly differently now than you used to. How do you define success?
Well, personal success is, you know, like the example I gave earlier, is simply doing something that you're proud to have as part of your life. And I don't think that's a trivial thing to think about, because if you're going to grow an enterprise, it takes way too much time than to have, you know, than to spend time on something that drains you rather than energizes you. But beyond that, success has to come in the eyes of your stakeholders. You know, a lot of time, for example, as a businessman, I'd like to have our customers spend lots of money with us and recommend us to their friends and families. Well, that's not what they want. What they want is whatever their goal is. They may want to have, you know, a great place to shop, if they're going into a restaurant, a great place to relax. Only by achieving success in their eyes can I achieve success in my eyes. And I think a lot of naive people, when they start out in business, they go into business, they think they're going into business to make money. After they've been there a while, they realize you go into business to take care of other people. And it's by taking care of other people that you make a lot of money. And so success then is really achieving the goals of each of your stakeholders, not just your customers, but the goals of your employees. For example, a great place to work, have fun, and make money is an employee goal. You achieve that, you're going to have low turnover, you're going to have high performance, and you're going to make lots of money.
It makes such a difference when you walk into a company and you can tell the employees love their job.
it's possible. You know, I think a lot of people give up on that. They just think, oh, you know, they're Generation Xers or Yers or whatever in the heck the current jargon is. But I find that pretty much what they want in terms of a great place to work is unchanged. They like to be treated fairly and with respect, and they like to have a strong sense of belonging and significance. You do that, you're going to have success with them.
Mm.
And the same with your customers.
Mm. Now, I think people are still taught today in management school, you know, what you measure is what your employees will do. So how do we measure glow? How do we measure glow if we own a business or we're a manager in a business?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. I think the bottom line with your employees is turnover. Do they stay, and do they perform? In other words, can you keep the people that are most valuable to your business? And everybody knows that if you have more than three employees, one of them is going to be better than the other ones typically. So there are most valued employees. Are you able to keep those? And then the other part of measuring that is, you know, part of our company and a part of our business is measuring the quality of the employee experience, because the quality of that experience predicts whether you're going to be able to keep your employees. So measuring the things that matter is very important. We recommend that companies measure the loyalty of every stakeholder. Are you keeping your best employees, your best customers, your best suppliers? And the reason for that is that, you know, your best stakeholders are volunteers in your success. They can go anywhere.
Okay, makes sense. Once you've got those measurements in place, one of the biggest problems with metrics, of course, is that we often get too many metrics or meaningless metrics.
Yes.
So how do we ensure that once we've instilled a process, how do we ensure that it's actually working for us?
Well, there are, you know, that's our company started off as a measurement company, by the way, and people, most, you know, companies measure way more than they need to measure. We recommend that you measure, first off, stakeholder loyalty. Those things should move together. As turnover goes down, customer frequency ought to go up. And we've looked at that stuff for years, as should profitability and those sorts of things. You look at those things, and if they aren't headed in the right direction, then you start looking at some of the other numbers that you can gather. But you don't necessarily gather them all and look at them all at the same time, because it gets confusing. We measure things now because we have software that allows us to measure them, not because we can do something about whatever it is we're measuring. So,
right.
You know, a lot of times I'll talk to leaders that when I say, well, what are the indicators? And they give us all kinds of statistics. And gosh, in some cases, I've counted more than 40. And I can tell you, no one can keep 40 numbers in their head.
Right. And the eyes kind of glaze over at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah, they do. And I'm trained, you know, part of my training was as a statistician, and my eyes glaze over.
Yeah, yeah. So just keep it real, basically. In the subtitle of your book, it's Make It Glow, How to Build a Company Reputation for Human Goodness. Tell us what you mean by human goodness, Tom.
Sure. Human goodness is really a set of virtues, and it means what is our basic morality? And I did some research, and fortunately, there were a lot of people that had done research for thousands of years to converge on what are six core virtues that define what it means to be one human good to another human, regardless of culture, religion, or time. And those virtues boil down to six: wisdom, courage, justice, humanity, temperance, and transcendence. And all of those things, you know, those are labels. All of those things have pretty deep definitions to them. But human goodness means your company stands for each of those six things. You can't just stand for one or two of them. You got to have them all. And what the enterprise building process is you're building those virtues into your company, how you do business. I'll give you a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
I can have a product guarantee that when you use it as a customer, makes you feel insulted when you come back that I'm questioning your integrity, or I can design it in a way that it comes back and I question the reliability of my product. That's a choice I make as a leader.
Mm.
Many companies, when they offer a guarantee, but when you go to use it, you kind of walk away, you know, from the, you know, using the product or bringing it back, saying, "Gee, I almost feel like I was a bad person for bringing it back."
Right, right.
The difference between those two is the values of the company.
Yeah. And you say that ethical problems are not necessarily the problem in business, but the problem of character is the problem. I wonder if you'd explain that.
Yes. Well, you know, the ethical issues, particularly professional ethics, and business has an ethic to it, is really a choice between right and wrong. I mean, it's not right to overcharge people. It's not right to cheat and so on and so forth. And it's not right to do things that are greedy. And you see many, many examples of that among business leaders. Those things are obvious. Character comes into play in a company when you have right and right. You have to choose two right things to do. So, for example, I can, as a leader in my company, I can preach the value of family and a balanced lifestyle. At the same time that I say every project must be done on time and doesn't matter how much time it takes you to do that.
Mm.
Well, there are going to be times in my business when I have somebody who wants to go to some important family function, let's say it's their child's first soccer game, and I also have a project I need for them to get done. Staying and doing the project is right, going to the soccer game is right. As a boss, which one I choose will determine the character of my company. Neither right nor wrong, but it will determine eventually the tenor and the culture that I build within my company. Those are hard decisions to make, and a lot of times us leaders can easily talk about one because it's easy to talk about until it comes time to have to actually choose it.
Right, right. And why is it so important to have a strong company culture? Because I've worked with companies that you walk in the door and immediately you sense this culture there, and others seem very haphazard about it.
Well, it's for a real clear reason. A culture, as I think about them, is the residue of a company's success. It's all the things that it tried over its history in order to be successful and stay in business. And it's really the assumptions about how we treat people, how do we be successful with people, what is the right way to take care of this situation or that situation. Over time, those things that get tried become the beliefs of the company and therefore its culture. And the more correct, the more right those beliefs are, the stronger the culture is. And so it's what you feel when you go from one company to another company. Let's say one retailer where I live, there's, for example, Nordstrom and there's a Neiman Marcus. If I go into one versus the other, and they sell a lot of the same products, but they feel different. Mm-hmm. That difference that I feel in there is nothing but culture.
Okay. And we're almost at the end of our show, Tom, but I wanted to ask you what you know now as a businessman that you wish you'd known 20 years ago when you were first starting out your company yourself.
There are a few basic things to pay attention to and that you can't shortchange. One of them is have a watchmaker's eye for the detail of your vision. It's not a one-page statement of this is what we want to be when we grow up, but rather it's more like the Constitution of the United States. It's an 8 or 9 page description of where we're going, how we're going to get there. Pay attention to the people. Set as high a possible standard as you can on keeping people. Once you lose faith in someone, move on. I've seen very, very few times, particularly when you get toward the top of an enterprise, where you lose confidence in someone, that it comes back. Mm. It's just time for both of you to move on. And then always to put the needs, the wants, the goals of your stakeholders, your employees, your customers, your suppliers, your investors, ahead of your own. I think of it this way. The leader eats last. You take care of everybody else around your business, outside your business, your community, inside your business, your employees and suppliers, before you even think about taking care of yourself. And if you do that, and you have a compelling and differentiating business idea, you'll be wildly successful.
I think that's a wonderful philosophy, and I thank you for sharing that with us. I just want to ask you very quickly, in all that you've achieved, you talk about family value and, you know, plus the value of your business. What is the one thing that you're most proud of?
I think the growth. Nobody's ever asked me that question before. it would have to be the quality of the people that work in our company and what they're able to do.
Well,
over time,
obviously they make your company glow. And I thank you for being with us today, and have a good rest of the day.
Thank you so much for having me.
And my guest was Dr. Tom Dakotas. His book, Make It Glow, How to Build a Company Reputation for Human Goodness, Flawless Execution, and Being Best in Class. And please stay with us. Coming up next, we have Karen Roll. She's a local businesswoman. She has her own holistic business, and she'll be talking to us about that. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Pause has the dog or cat of your dreams. just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
Attention KKNW listeners, we have a brand new show for you every Thursday at 2 p.m. The Living Life Show presented by Travel Host Magazine. I'm Buzz.
And I'm Robin. The Living Life Show is your weekly guide to living life better. We bring you local and celebrity guests each week who bring interesting ideas and tips on getting more out of life.
And listeners, you can win big prizes like antiques, jewelry, clothing, dining, and a special grand prize in January. So be sure to listen in every Thursday at 2 p.m. right here on KKNW, 1150 a.m.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And in the last segment of today's show, we're joined by local businesswoman Karen Rail. And I'm going to bring her straight on and let her tell you her journey. Let me just bring you in and you can explain everything, Karen. So I hooked up with Karen, my wonderful assistant, who actually lives in New York. We've never actually met, but we've worked together since December. Did a search on the internet a while back on holistic businesses. This was several weeks ago. And one of the criteria we're looking for were local business people who'd made career transitions and were very successful at what they're doing. And I know that Karen's been in business for 9 years. So let me ask you, Karen, you used to work in engineering firms, right?
I did, yes.
And you were marketing, is that correct?
I was a marketing manager.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what happened? Why did you want to make that transition?
Well, I didn't feel like I really fit into the corporate world. And I also really had a lot more creativity that I felt like I needed to express. And I had gotten interested in doing energy work and kind of doing more holistic kinds of things and was really exploring how that could kind of translate out into helping people. Another big reason for me to want to be in business on my own was so that I could manage my own time. Yeah, really big one. I have grandkids and I really wanted to be able to be active with them.
Yeah. I remember you saying on the phone when we had our initial chat that you felt like a round peg in a square hole when you worked in the engineering world. I think many people feel that way.
Yeah, I really did. Yeah.
So you want to get out, but you don't quite know what you want to do. How do you go about changing things?
Well, I started by taking lots of classes and exploring kind of what my real values and traits, and I also looked at a lot of the things that I had already been doing and where my best gifts were. And by doing that, I just paid attention to what was showing up. And the business that I'm doing now, you know, showed up by quote unquote accident. Mm-hmm. You know, I never expected it.
Let's tell our listeners what it is, because I didn't announce that at the beginning.
I'm a professional organizer and clutter coach. Mm. And then I also do presentations and teach, and I'm now developing products as well. So I didn't, like when I was a kid, I didn't think, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be an organizer, you know. And even when it started showing up, you know, like the clutter piece, I just like, really, you know, I'm supposed to do this.
Right.
It didn't seem very glamorous at the time.
Right. And I noticed on your website you have something to do with ADHD as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, how does the clutter thing fit in with ADHD?
Well, many people with ADHD have clutter challenges and challenges with time and with their space and with their stuff, and very creative. And so therefore, you know, hard to manage all the projects and all the things that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started my business, I didn't my intention wasn't to be an ADHD coach, but that's who kept showing up a lot as clients were people who either knew they have it or they suspected it. So I started really exploring that more as far as really getting more knowledge about it.
Okay. And you say, you keep saying things, this showed up or that showed up. How did, what kind of exercises were you doing? What kind of, were you doing meditation? I know you said you were going to workshops and classes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, meditation, doing my own decluttering and organizing. And it's interesting because I used to be very disorganized my whole life. Organizing and decluttering didn't come natural to me. And so that's why when it started showing up where I started helping people, that, you know, it's like, ooh, I can really do this. But really it was about, you know, really creating the energy and the space for me to kind of get out of my own way and see what showed up by continuing to kind of clear my stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you've been in business for yourself 9 years now.
I have. Right. Mm-hmm.
So did you have an exit strategy when you wanted to leave the engineering company? Did it happen very gradually for you? Did you just one day decide, you know what, I'm going to quit and give myself space and think about it?
Yeah, I just decided one day I can't do this anymore. When I'm doing marketing, I was working, you know, 60 to 80 hours a week, and my kids were in their late teens at the time, and that just wasn't working. So I had saved some money, and I was also doing energy work and Reiki and that kind of thing, and exploring whether or not that was my path. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I just gave my 2 weeks' notice and said, I've got to do something else. And, you know, I really needed to create the space and break out of that.
Well, good for you. Good for you. It's something that I think many people struggle with because they know they want out and they want something different. But, you know, that balance of paying the mortgage and, you know, feeding the kids always comes into play. So I guess it was since you're already doing Reiki and natural healing, that it was kind of inevitable that you'd get into a holistic business. Tell us how, as a declutterer, or how do you define yourself, a professional organizer?
Yeah, I call myself a professional organizer and clutter coach.
Okay, so how does that, how do you define that as holistic? What do you incorporate into that business to make it an holistic business?
Well, I'm in people's homes and with their stuff and, you know, in their space, and that incorporates all every area of their life. So, you know, I think this is more holistic than most things are. And I'm in people's lives much more than their therapists and their massage therapists, because I'm messing with their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, and by doing that, I mean, it's the process that people go through is so holistic, because once, you know, often when they've called someone like me, they've really either reached a bottom, you know, they really aren't inviting people in, or they're just really can't move forward in their life. And so once they start moving their stuff and getting some systems in place and feeling better about things, then all sorts of things open up.
Yeah. And I know from personal experience, because I live quite a ways from here, but I had an organizer come in a while ago, and it's very personal when people start going through your stuff.
It is. Yeah.
So how do you approach that if somebody's kind of worry about you going through stuff?
Well, I take their lead, so I don't go anywhere that they're not comfortable with. So we really spend some time just getting to know each other. Often that's on the phone first before they even know for a good match, you know. Mm-hmm. But definitely when I'm there, I really, and since I do have, you know, a history and have done my own energy healing and that kind of thing for a long time, I can kind of, you know, follow their lead and get started with something that they're comfortable with first. And then once they start experiencing some success with that, then at some point they can bring me into the places that they're, you know, they have even more shame or discomfort around.
So what was your biggest fear when you made the transition and when you first became self-employed? You know, I know a lot of people who say, oh, my biggest fear was that I'd end up a bag lady, but you obviously haven't done that. So,
yeah, the biggest fear certainly was getting to the place where I was really earning a living, because there's so many, especially there's so many costs that come up that you don't think about when you're a business owner. My biggest fear was managing my time so that I still had a personal life, because, you know, I found that the bigger that my business got and the more clients that I had, the more administration I needed to do and bookkeeping and that kind of thing. So, but by the time I did it, it didn't take me real long to really just trust and know that, because things just kept lining up for it. But yeah, the biggest thing was the money.
Right. And what would you say was your biggest challenge?
in getting the business started?
Yeah, and going from, you know, having a paid income, and aside from the financial issues, what was the biggest challenge to you to get the business, you know, to a point where you felt, hey, this is a real business?
Finding ways to market myself to where the income was steady, you know, the client flow was steady, and managing the ups and downs of, you know, the ebbs and flows, because, you know, some clients want to meet ongoing, you know, 3 hours once a week for a long time. Others are just maybe a couple of times. And so a big challenge was, you know, finding a way for it to be steady.
And what do you know now that you've been in business for 9 years that you wish you'd known when you started out?
To delegate things as quickly as possible. You know, I was trying to do everything. I think I took a little long to like hire a bookkeeper and team with other people. So definitely, and, you know, having someone do some of the administrative work, contract some of the work out, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also teach that to your clients. I have a list here of some of the things that you I want to ask you what time styling is. So you have a list here of some of the things you talk over with your clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we often hear of time management, but you teach something called, or practice something called time styling. What do you mean by that?
Well, it is time management and much more than that. It's discovering what style you are, because there's so many different ways of managing our time. And really, for me, it's goes in depth with each client to you know, asking lots and lots of questions. So doing lots of life coaching to discover what works for them. Because some people use a Palm Pilot, others will use a calendar. And then, of course, there's, you know, a lot of things within that to discover that. But it's also about what their flow is. You know, how their day really needs to flow in order for them to have balance in their life.
Okay. And you say do what you love and delegate the rest. And you say that was one of your biggest challenges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to find people. When I moved, had a hardest time finding somebody to pick up my research, not for the radio show, but for other projects. And then I came across this wonderful woman in New York, and we've never met. We do everything by email, and it's working out really well. Mm-hmm. So how do you teach somebody to let go of doing everything themselves? Because I think that's a major challenge that many women have when they start their own business.
By doing it a piece by piece. And when they're working with me, I mean, that's their first piece of that, because that's a lot of times people go through a lot just to hire an organizer, you know, and say, oh, I can't, and admit they can't do it themselves. And I see, like, once I'm working with someone, I am a huge resource for them. That's a big part of what I do. You know, I've gathered all sorts of people that I can refer people to as things start moving for them. So I'll suggest it lightly, you know, like, oh, instead of paying your own bills, you know, since you're challenged with that, here's what it would look like if you would hire someone.
Right. What does a typical client look like to you? Or do they vary?
They vary greatly. And that's one of the things I love about what I'm doing. Most of them, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business owners who are trying to find that balance, and a lot of very creative people, you know, healers and writers and artists who, because it uses a different part of the brain to organize than it does to be creative. So,
One of the things you talk about under time styling is overcoming chronic lateness. And I'm one of those people who's compulsively early. It drives me crazy, because I carry books and work with me everywhere I go to compensate for that. But I run into people constantly who are, you can guarantee they're going to be 25 minutes late.
Yes.
Or they're going to be 45 minutes late. How do you teach people to deal with being late in their own lives? Because it just adds more stress to their life.
Right, which becomes very familiar, all that stress. Various strategies, you know, try one thing and then another, but definitely using the calendar. And then what I invite them to do is not only look at what time they need to be somewhere, but how long it's going to take them, and actually schedule it into their calendar so they take the travel time into consideration. Another part is setting a timer a half an hour before they actually need to leave, and kind of setting you know, call it a non-negotiable strategy that when it, once it goes off, then I have to begin getting ready. I'm not going to add one more thing before I leave the house.
Yeah, one of my closest friends, we joke about it, but she's always about an hour and a half late. And so I say, you know, if I know I'm going to meet her at 10:30, if I know I want to meet her at 10:30, I tell her 9 a.m.
Yes. I do that with my husband, too.
Yeah, I gotta love it.
Yeah.
Also under time styling, you talk about making compulsions work for you instead of against you. How does that work?
Well, you can compulsively look at your calendar just as easily as you can compulsively, you know, like be late. Compulsively use your timer when you're working on a project.
Okay. I read this on your website as well. And let's go ahead and give out your website, and we'll do it again before the end of the show.
It is www.clearliving.biz, B-I-Z.
Okay, and that's the name of your company.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the things I found on there was where the word clutter derives from. It derives from the Middle English word clutter, which means to coagulate, and that's about as stuck as you can get. So I know, because I've experienced this, how it just really frees you up when you get rid of all that clutter. But what is the psychology behind that? Why is it so important to let go of all of the clutter around you?
Well, because there is all that old energy. It keeps you stuck in the past, definitely. And also, it's a reminder of all those like unfinished projects and things. So it's hard to for the universe to bring in what you're currently wanting to do and what you're moving into when there's all that there, you know. And also, just the visual of all the stuff, it paralyzes you.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever regret that you left the corporate world and started your own business?
Never.
You don't look as though you do, but I wanted to just throw that out there.
Yeah.
So where do you see your business growing from here? You said that you are now launching products. Or are you working on the projects? Are they ready to launch now? What's happening with that?
Yeah, I have another business called Conscious Beginnings. And our first product is launching in about a week. It's called it's a color-coded file system. One's for home and one's for small businesses. That's ready-made. And it's called File It and Find It. And so it's Fifi.
Fifi.
So Fifi can help you to file your papers with fun, you know.
Oh, see, you've been inside my brain because I color code everything.
Yeah. Well, that's what I discovered.
Everybody laughs at me, but it works really well.
It does, yeah. So I have that. And then I also really want to get into businesses more. It's kind of like after doing a lot of residential. So I have another professional organizer that I've teamed with because I found that that's what works for me is having partners in order to really, you know, make it into something. And we've created another business called Matrix Business Organizing. So I'm creating that now as well.
Okay. And what are you going to be focusing on there?
On high achieving entrepreneurs.
Okay, very good, very good. What's been one of the most challenging cases you've been called in to help with?
Someone with only aisleways through their home.
Oh my gosh!
Where there's, you know, like the newspapers and the magazines piled everywhere, where there's where the stove couldn't even be used because there's so much stuff on it. So.
What is going on with somebody when that's some kind of mental illness, isn't it? I think I seem to remember seeing something on Oprah about people who had this
for hoarding. Yeah.
Yeah. What is going on there?
Lots of things. I mean, usually there is, like you say, some kind of mental issue. A lot of times they just have reached that overwhelm. Maybe, you know, someone died and then they got divorced and then, you know, they lost their job. There's a whole progression of things that got him to the place where things just couldn't reverse.
Yeah. And so where do you start when you go into somewhere that's such chaos like that?
Just choose one area where they can have some success. I mean, maybe the stove gets cleared off and then they really, you know, teach them to kind of how to maintain that and start feeling good about that. Usually with that that much clutter, it takes a team. You know, so I'll bring in some other people to help once they've become comfortable with me.
Interesting. And so let's go ahead and give out your website one more time. The name of your business, Karen, is?
It's Clear Living.
And your website?
Is clearliving.biz.
Okay. And what do you want to leave our listeners with today? We appreciate you being with us. So, especially in the studio here, I don't very often get live, you know, people actually in the studio.
leave people with, well, anyone who has clutter and organizational challenges, just know that there are people out there that are there to help, because sometimes people are so full of, you know, kind of the shame and think that there's no one that can help, that I think, you know, just knowing that working with someone, and even if not hiring someone, just have a friend coming over and being a buddy.
Yeah, I think
really
that's teaming up.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner they start, the better, right?
Situation. Yeah. And that life changes dramatically once you see this, you know, really start this process.
Okay. Well, awesome. We really appreciate you being with us today. And Karen Rail, name of your business again?
Clear Living.
Clear Living. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good. Thank you.
And I want to thank each of you for listening in today. My first guest, of course, was Tom Dakotas. His book, Make It Glow, How to Build a Company Reputation for Human Goodness, Flawless Execution, and Being Best in Class. And if you have any questions on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or you can check out the website, conversationslive.net. You can also listen to podcasts of featured shows right there. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong, and please join me next Monday at noon for more Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Food, drugs, alcohol, and sex. If you're struggling at any level with an addiction, tune into Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair next Monday for Mindful Solutions for Addiction and Relapse Prevention. This powerful new program developed by Doctors Elisha and Stephanie Goldstein can help you start turning things around today. That's next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.